It's Reality Check with Craig Price.
I'm an idiot.
4 minutes in and I'm already wrong.
I'm like a monkey. Hello, look at me. Craig, shut up.
Hey, I need you guys to do these things.
You're like A Beautiful Mind. I'm more like Forrest Gump. So it's... Welcome to another Reality Check with Craig Price. I am your host, Craig Price. We've got a great show for you this week. We've got Janine Iannarelli to join me to talk about corporate aviation. She deals in buying and selling as a broker agent corporate aircraft. And, you know, as a civilian, I don't really have much knowledge of corporate aircraft. I am stuck on a lot of commercial aircraft, and I know that that can be a real pain. I just came back from a flight to Savannah, Georgia, and I had to take four U.S. Airway flights, and it gets so complicated, it gets so aggravating getting on commercial flights. Never mind the joke that is TSA. I'm sorry, but I think a lot of that TSA stuff is window dressing. There's really not much to stop you from getting on the plane and doing something, and we'll talk about that in the interview, but I think it's there to really just make people feel like they're being safe, feel like someone's taking care of it. And so those inconveniences are there to prove to the rest of us that they're doing their jobs. Then you get on the plane and you've got people who don't really care where it's going. They've got, you know, they delays, they overbook. They've got people crammed on the flights, people who missing their flights, telling people that they can start boarding the plane, but yet halfway through they decide, hey, no more carry-on. And now you've got a gate check, but not just regular gate check. You have to actually check in, and then two stops later, you will get your gear. My gate check, you go in, they give it to you, and then you once you get off the airplane in the little jetway there, they get your bag. No, not this time. What they did is they put it on, and you will get it at baggage claim. The whole point of taking carry-on is so you can avoid baggage, and so they, on the way to Savannah, they pretty much ruined my suitcase. Thank you. On the way back, you've got to deal with delays. You've got not only to deal with the irritating people who work for the airlines, but quite frankly, a lot of people who are just really too self-absorbed to be on a plane. You know, instead of taking 13 to 45 minutes to explain the emergency air crash if we're crashing procedure, why don't you take 5 minutes when you land to explain how to exit rows? That's what I would love. Orderly, one in a row at a time. But apparently, a lot of people think it is a free-for-all, complete chaos. As soon as they can go, they go. They're knocking down old ladies. Some poor old lady got elbowed and got knocked into back into her row as she tried to get out because people two rows behind her felt the need to go. So it has become this mass transit, almost like the subway in the skies situation. And so I could see the reason why a lot of people would want private aircraft. You don't have to deal with all the TSA stuff. You don't have to deal with other passengers. You don't have to deal with delays. And quite frankly, you can be a lot more productive flying corporate than you can flying commercial. So I had Janine come on the show because I wanted to really know about corporate aircrafts. And quite frankly, I didn't realize that there's this whole backstory, this behind-the-scenes situation on buying and selling aircraft. It's not as easy as you think. I thought it would be fairly simple. You'd just go to like a lot. Some there was a couple dealerships you'd go to and boom, there you go. Not the case. And so I have Janine to come on to talk about corporate aircraft and, quite frankly, to take me down a notch because the stress I've had flying the last 2 weeks to 2 months has finally culminated to this podcast. And so while Janine explains all the advantages and what is the great things about private aircraft and how you can purchase them, I am going to take a nap, maybe refresh myself, knowing that the bulk of my travel is done for the year. So as I calm down, let me give you Janine Iannarelli. Now, do you actually take any commercial flights at all anymore?
Yeah, I fly commercially quite a bit. Actually, business aviation is one of the biggest consumers of commercial aviation airline tickets. I forget what the exact numbers are, but if I say billions, I'm probably wrong. It might be hundreds of millions, but it's astounding.
Well, that makes sense because every time I'm on a plane, there's always three people who either work for the airline or are working in the airport of some sort.
Exactly.
Buddy pass, I guess.
We don't fly for free.
No, I didn't say that. But it's one of those situations where there's always a guy. They always have a lot more luggage than the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. Those heavy cases of books.
Well, we get two carry-ons. Mm-hmm. A personal and a carry-on. But I always see them there with three or four, and then they gate check everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the trick of the business traveler nowadays is drag it down the aisle and make them gate check it. So this way you didn't have to check it in the beginning and pay the fee.
Or lose your luggage. I hate
Or lose
checking.
Your luggage.
So, and how did you get interested in aviation in general? Because it doesn't seem like it's something that people aspire to unless you wanted to be a pilot. Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in business, and this was just a different avenue of the business world that I thought was worth exploring. I was in college looking for a part-time job to supplement my education. So when I went into my chosen career, which was completely different from what I'm in today,
which is like 95% of the people, so.
I would have some practical experience in the business world that I could bring to the table. I was just trying to beef up my resume. So I met an entrepreneur in the business aviation industry that had started this firm called AmSTAT, which basically provides research to the tradespeople. I was the first employee of AmSTAT. I worked part-time through my senior year, and as graduation approached, the company, or I should say the principal founder and her then husband, who was a YPO, which to me was all very impressive at that age, and running a large manufacturing firm, convinced me that there were better career opportunities if I would stay right where I was as opposed to transitioning. It was going to be the advertising industry. But the advertising industry in Manhattan, so
it's cutthroat. So
cutthroat, really competitive, and I had no fear and was sure of survival. But I kind of liked the idea that your career trajectory might be a little bit faster if I got some practical small business experience. And they opened the door, and I accepted, walked through, and the rest is history.
Yeah, because I lived in New York City for a while, and when I was doing stand-up, and I temped at a lot of these ad agencies, and it was cutthroat. I'm like, I'm surprised there wasn't a lot of people committing seppuku in, you know, ritual suicide because of all the competition, the way the stress involved. I'd see them on, you know, deadlines, and especially when things are going out to the print, it was just crazy. So,
well, you're talking about the artistic side of the business as well. I was more interested in the account work. I wanted to manage accounts, land accounts. I wanted to be a salesperson.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. And so now you have an industry which at the time was being viewed as somewhat of a mega trend industry. I don't know if you remember that book or heard of that book.
Explain it for the people who haven't.
I'm afraid I don't remember the author, but back in the early 80s, there was a number of industries plotted by this author that he termed mega trend industries. And I don't think that business aviation was a specific mention in the book, but it became a catch-all phrase among people in the industry in the early 80s, that this was a growth industry.
Like healthcare is now.
Exactly.
It's one of those where they said that healthcare for the next 10, 15, 20 years is going to be a mega business only because there's so many people aging. And so in the 80s, 90s, aviation was one of that this person targeted.
And it was looking for people like me, to be very honest. There was a lack of educated young people coming into the business. The traditional career path on the business side of aviation may have been former pilots, former mechanics, or family members whose family, for one reason or another, were already involved in the business aviation industry, and they were just transitioning into the role of salesperson. But there were no marketers. Outside of the major manufacturers who can make that kind of investment in a organizational structure and hire talent directly out of the university, the rest of the industry didn't do that. Okay, maintenance facilities, completion centers would go to trade schools or look for local tradespeople.
But niche marketing, though.
Niche marketing, yeah. Exactly. And I felt I brought a unique skill set. Educated young woman, no previous ties to the aviation industry, but drive, enthusiasm, and a willingness to learn.
And for those of you who don't know, I'm here with Janine Iannarelli. Did I say that right?
You said it perfectly.
In my mind, I was chanting it like a Gregorian monk. I was just making sure I had that right. And being Italian, I should be able, I can do the Relli part.
It comes naturally, right?
Well, it rolls off the tongue. Exactly. Iannarelli. Now that I know that it's a Y sounding in the front instead of the Ian or Iannarelli, I was going, it's got to be, it's Scottish. It's yeah, no, it can't be it. So Iannarelli, which is a very beautiful name. Does it mean anything in particular?
If it does, I'm not aware of that. But, you know, you have to look at the character behind the name. Just think about it. Immigrant grandparents probably forced, as many immigrants are, to modify their names, Americanize them to make it easy. And they chose to stick with that IA. And I think it distinguished them. And I hope I live up to the name.
Oh, I'm sure you do. And one of the main things that you deal in is corporate aviation, if they couldn't figure out what we're getting at. And as someone who flies coach almost exclusively, the concept of private or corporate aviation is just something that's alien to me. I mean, I'm used to only commercial flights. If I've been on a small aircraft, it's because it's an express jet that has been outfitted to uncomfortably fit 17 people. So the concept of saving time and money, which actually it does save time and money to, if you're a big enough company and you've got enough things going on to get a jet or a corporate aircraft, is alien to me. So give me the two reasons why someone, if you had the money and the resources and the necessity, you would go looking for a corporate plane.
Time and security.
So number one is time, because I do think it's a time saver. I think
it makes time.
Yes, you can work on the plane.
Exactly. It creates time. It gives back time to the busy executive. It's the most efficient way to travel.
Which is why I thought it was ridiculous when the motor companies went to Washington. The first thing they were criticized were they took a private plane from Detroit to Washington, D.C., like they're going to drive their, Fiats or whatever they're...
Or spend 2 days on the airlines, or certainly lose an entire day.
Oh, yeah.
To go to whether it's a two-hour or one-hour meeting. It was criticism leveled because it was a popular target at the moment and easy to do. It's unfortunate. Some of the automobile manufacturers have gotten back into private aviation. I mean, obviously, they dispelled with the assets because they were put under pressure. But they've since segued back in, because when you look at compensation packages for senior level executives, particularly the person driving the company, so to speak, is it really worth losing time in the office to time on the airlines? Take the amount of working hours and divide it into their salary and ask yourself that question. They need to be home. That's just top level management.
Well, even if it's not just being home, if you're on a commercial flight that does not have Wi-Fi, which is only something that's recently happened, you are incommunicado for 4 hours.
You probably shouldn't be conducting sensitive business on a commercial airliner anyway, because you never know who's sitting around you.
Right. But I mean, the fact that there's nothing they can do for 4 hours besides internal stuff that they can't communicate with anybody. If someone needs to get a hold of them, there's nothing they can do until they land. And that's a huge amount of time. 4 hours can cost a company millions of dollars if they don't get a hold of somebody.
Can cost them some big deals if they're not able to move quickly or respond quickly.
So time is the number one.
I would say so.
And security, in what way?
In many different ways. I mean, first off, let's talk about knowing who your crew members are, knowing who your passengers are. You control your destiny in that regard. You do not allow access to your airplane by anyone other than authorized people. There's no one going to be transporting any sort of questionable or strange items on board. Unless you know about them. I mean, you basically regulate and control who comes in contact with your airplane for the majority of the time. I mean, obviously, airplanes are then entrusted to third-party vendors for maintenance, but then you rely on that third-party vendor to have its tight controls as well. But day-to-day operations, you secure the airplane, you crew the airplane, you manage the passenger.
So usually the companies are in charge of the crew as well, or it's not like a...
They're usually dedicated employees or employees of a management company with whom you've subcontracted the operational control of your airplane.
So you're always, it's Jake, he's flying today.
Exactly. I think there's a great deal of comfort conveyed when you know who is behind the yoke of your airplane. Other security concerns is you also can control the maintenance. You can make sure, or you can administer, or you put someone in charge who oversees the care of the airplane. So you know that when there's a scheduled inspection, that the airplane's going down for that period of time to complete the inspection. Usually, private aviation operators, I don't want to say spare no expense, but don't defer items that it's perfectly legitimate to defer certain items that do not affect the operation of the airplane or the airworthiness. But more times than not, they elect to fix everything. They're very fastidious in the care of their aircraft.
So, it's definitely a control issue, which is great because you seem like when we go to the airport, as soon as you walk in the door, you give up almost all your control.
Absolutely. You're a passenger.
Well, you're more, less than a passenger. You're sometimes your cargo.
Yes.
You know, all these security checkpoints that 78%, and that's just a number I'm making up, 78% of my mind is useless. It's just there for show.
It's window dressing.
Yeah, it's like, look at all the stuff we're doing to make you safe. It's like, you're not, because if I can't bring on anything over 3.5 ounces. Well, what if I need 12 ounces, me and my three buddies will just carry 3.5 ounces and meet inside the plane. We're all going to be sitting close by. Not that I'm contemplating any, in case NSA's listening, I'm not contemplating any horrible things going on, but
I'm not sure I worry about passengers boarding aircraft anymore. I worry about ground support,
the ground crews and the maintenance people.
Go back to 9/11, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that some of the items that were stored on board airplanes, that the efforts were thwarted because we grounded the fleet. Box cutters, likelihood, were planted by ground support equipment.
So, yeah, again, they're wasting resources looking like they're making us safe in the front by going through security. When you have a corporate plane, do you just like show up at the hangar and just walk right on the plane? Or?
Well, it's not as easy as that, you know. And again, I'm not as well versed in the subject of how the security clearances are administered.
Sure, but you've been on a plane.
But there is a
There's
a passenger manifest generated. Mm-hmm. I mean, the passenger manifest has to be checked against watch lists. Depending on the particular airport and depending on the particular fixed base operator that the flight is staged at, may have varying degrees of security. All of them meet the federal requirements for clearance.
Yeah.
But yes, you know in advance. You just don't show up and get on board an airplane.
Wow.
It doesn't quite work that way for the majority of travel. Now, there's general aviation, which differentiates itself a bit from business aviation, that there is more freedom of flight, that people can go out.
And that's private owners who own like small, like a Cessna or something.
Exactly.
That they want to fly on the weekend.
Exactly.
Now, if I was in the market, which I'm not, which is funny because I get a lot of emails, not from your company, from a completely different company. I get a lot of spam emails asking me to buy planes or to charter planes. And I'm like, you have obviously not done your market research because I am not in the market for a plane. But yet I do get them from, I think it's from an Italian group. It's very hilarious every week when I get them. But if I was in the market, it's not just easy. I can't just go down to the Boeing dealership, you know?
No, and there's not really, let's say, a handbook or a directory you can go pick up.
I can't get a Lear on Craigslist, is really.
You might. I haven't looked for one. I know on eBay I've seen some airplanes listed. It's not necessarily the path that I would recommend traveling.
Really? You don't think a Craigslist plane would be as good as a well-documented
sale? You know what? There's a lot of unique sales efforts going on today, so let's not rule it out completely. It may be a fantastic airplane, but I dig deeper than just Craigslist.
Well, like I said, a lot of people don't even know where to start. So where was a good place to start looking for a plane if you're in the market?
Good question. If you don't already know someone who owns an airplane and can provide a recommendation, my suggestion is to start Googling, perhaps aircraft sales, aircraft brokers. Peruse some of the aviation websites that are established. If you put in aviation sales websites, I'm sure it'll come up with a number of different places, venues, that you'll see listings of aircraft, and then you can start to dig a bit deeper and find out about the agencies selling the aircraft.
So is there a certain, you know, certain thing you want to look for from a potential, I guess it would be a broker or a sales rep? When you're looking at these websites, when you're looking for a plane, is there some like catchwords you need to look out for? Like you're like, well, this is going to be kind of iffy right here. You want to look for, is there a certification? Is there something you can?
There is no certification, no credentials issued to aircraft brokers. It is basically an industry that's wide open. We try to self-police. I wouldn't say that it's always very effective. It's really a case of caveat emptor, the buyer beware.
She's using a lot of Latin words.
It's the Italian in me.
That's all right. You're going way
to my roots.
You're going old school Italian, back to Latin.
you really need to do your homework. And so if you come across an aircraft, okay, let's divide this into two different subjects here. If you know what type aircraft you want, you go after the aircraft, you may not care who you're dealing with. You're going to be more concerned about the aircraft that you're buying. If you're unsure as to what direction you should be headed or what type of airplane you should buy, then it would be advisable to retain the services of an aircraft professional who could help guide you down that path. And you need to do your homework there as well. You want to find someone who has extensive product knowledge, great market knowledge. You want someone who has an established reputation within the industry. Networking is pretty important in our business, and that kind of keeps newcomers out of it because it's a closed industry. Even though I used the words previously, it's an open industry. They're not so welcoming to newcomers.
Well, they're suspicious because the clientele has a lot more capital available to them. I mean, you're going to buy a plane. You're not going to, it's not, should I get a Toyota Tercel or a Cessna or a Learjet? You know, it's definitely people with money who are going to be buying a plane, or a company with money. So the marks are higher. So there's more likely that someone will target the big fish in an illicit affair kind of situation. Where, not that they're all doing that, but I mean, that's why they're suspicious, is because there's too many big fish that have deep pockets that someone who is not credible or trustworthy is going to be trying to hunt after.
Even the tradespeople will be somewhat critical of someone who they've never heard of or think they've never heard of, and they'll do some research themselves. And the reason being is, don't waste my time. Don't waste my clients' time, particularly in a market such as we are in today, where buyers are few and far between. You listen with an open ear. You certainly listen to anyone who calls in off one of your aircraft offered for sale, but you want to make sure that they're a producer, that what they say they can accomplish, they actually are capable of doing so. Worst thing I feel is that if you represent the seller of an airplane and you start entertaining all types of prospective buyers, people who basically are not qualified, you're going to annoy your client. Because remember, part of business aviation is all about, once again, security. Who's gaining access to my airplane? Privacy. You know, discretion is pretty important, because business, you know, we worry about corporate espionage on many different levels. And I don't know how many people have actually drawn the parallels between corporate travel and what new deals are being developed. So buyers, or I should say sellers, are very cautious about having people come look at their aircraft, gaining access, or wasting their valuable time negotiating a transaction that they never had any intention of concluding.
Well, so we're in the situation, and we've Googled, and we find your lovely company, the Par Avion. I say that right? Because
your French is getting better every day.
I know how to swear in French. That's all I know. But I won't.
I wouldn't recognize it if you did that.
Okay, I'm sure you're much classier person than I'm used to hanging out with, especially if they're speaking French, being from the Quebec area. Now that we're in a situation where we've found your company, we've done research. We know you've got references. We've heard what a great person you are. We trust you. We want you to work with us to find a plane. What is your procedure in locating aircraft? I mean, like I said, sellers are few and far between, or buyers are few and far between. I mean, if I want to look for a Learjet that's going to be able to seat six and fly me transcontinental, what is part of your research to do that?
Well, I go through a Q&A with a prospective buyer, especially if they're first-time buyers, and I'll ask them some questions that'll help narrow the search to a particular, let's say, make and model, and then finally to a range within that make and model that might suit their needs. And several questions would include the distance that they will travel on a regular basis, the farthest distance they estimate they will travel on occasion, the number of passengers they will typically carry, and how many hours a year do they estimate they'll be traveling.
So how often?
How often?
Because I had almost all that. And I had the people, and I know transcontinental, but how often? So it's like every once a month we've got to go to Rio de Janeiro. You don't need to know why. And there's things that are going on, but I need six of us to go down there. So you're looking through a criteria.
Exactly. Because you're not necessarily going to buy the airplane that does everything. You want to suggest that they buy the aircraft that'll do most of their travel, and then we'll figure out something else for the longer haul trips. Good example, you just used Rio de Janeiro. What if the client comes to me, or I should say, if the client comes to me and says, most of our travel is from Houston to New Orleans to Oklahoma City, regional, let's say, 200 to 500 nautical miles, but we want to go to Europe, or we're going to go to New York once a year, or Rio de Janeiro once a year. So I need an airplane that can do all that. I would probably start to suggest that they need an airplane that'll do the regional travel, unless they're just set on buying something that is capable of doing that long-range haul, because the price points are going to be vastly different.
Yeah, there's no need to spend all that money if it's only once a year. You might as well charter once a year.
Charter or commercial airline. I mean, commercial airline does serve its purpose.
And so you do take commercial quite
Absolutely.
Often?
Absolutely. I fly commercial quite a bit. I fly privately as well, but I fly commercial extensively.
Now, one of the things that I when I hear about corporate aviation was recently, and it is very similar to my business, is that the politicians got involved and they started to talk about taxing corporate planes. And I'm not sure why they targeted that particular industry. I'm not sure. Is it...
Because it's a highly visible
industry. Is it really highly visible?
Well, once you make it known to the public, it becomes a great target if you're a politician trying to get votes. I don't think they looked at the contribution that the particular industry makes to the overall GNP, to a regional marketplace, to the jobs that it's created, and the jobs that now have been shed as a result of an economic downturn and an industry that has been much maligned by the current administration.
Well, I think they are able to just highlight that, you know, fat cats, whoever they may be, are use, you know, limousines, they use, yeah. They stay at resorts, and they use private jets. Because I know in my industry, where it's a lot of meetings, they really did a big hit job on Las Vegas.
Oh, killed Las Vegas.
Well, they forget that there are waiters, there mm-hmm. are servers, not people making $100,000 to $200, $1 million a year. You've got people who are making $30,000 a year losing their jobs because no one's going to Vegas anymore, because the perception of arriving in Vegas for an event is bad. Like, the perception of arriving on a private jet is elitist and
squandering money,
wasting money.
Mm-hmm. It's completely misunderstood, I would have to say. We talk about Detroit and all the jobs that were lost the initial part of this downturn, but nobody talks about Wichita, where two of the major airframe manufacturers are based, and how many jobs have been shed in that area and lost for good, because some manufacturing has been moved offshore and some jobs are just never coming back. I didn't like the fact that private jet operators were lumped into the same category as select hedge fund managers or billionaires. I mean, that's not the demographics of the majority of the operators of business aircraft.
Well, then who are the, what is the typical demographic?
Well, I work in two different markets, let's call it. My sweet spot is the entrepreneur, the individual who has created a company, probably smaller mid-cap, built the company, sold it off, invested his profits again, in some cases bought the aircraft for personal use, in other cases bought the aircraft to facilitate the movement of people. I'll give you a good example. I've worked quite a bit with the oil and gas industry, mostly in the North Texas area, and the Marcellus Shale provided a great windfall to a number of small gas exploration companies that were built around that industry. When they either sold off their interest in the Marcellus Shale or expanded into the Barnett Shale, I should say it's the other way around. It's Barnett in North Texas, Marcellus is in Pennsylvania. They decided that they needed transportation to facilitate the movement of key employees, engineers, landmen. You know, we're talking middle management and rank and file, and not just senior level executives. So they made the investment in aircraft to easily move people, particularly from smaller airports, Fort Worth, Alliance, out to Pittsburgh and the surrounding area. And Pittsburgh especially, because US Air cut a number of flights.
It used to be a hub for US Air.
Used to be.
And now it's
back to Philadelphia, and now it's a satellite market. So, you know, you can't spend 2 days moving people back and forth.
And I do notice that the oil and gas who get a bad rap for using corporate aviation actually are the ones that actually need it, because they're the ones that have, because, you know, oil is not, they don't have oil wells in downtown. Mm-hmm. They do in
Midland,
you know, Bozeman, Montana.
Bozeman, Montana.
Or they got to go outside of Calgary, Canada. You know, they're in not necessarily the easiest places to get to. So they actually have to fly. It's actually cheaper to fly them than to take six flights, because I fly a lot. And I have to, I fly as cheap as I possibly can so I can pass my, the savings on to my clients. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind taking a full, I don't actually, one of the few people who don't mind corporate travel. I mean, commercial travel, it doesn't bother me. Just, it seems a little irritating, but it's just standing in line. It's, you know, it's no big deal for me. Mm-hmm. But I have to go from one place. Sometimes I've got to take, especially if I go to these small out of the way events, I've got to take one connection, two connections, three connections. There's no straight shot. Mm-hmm. And so I am taking a full day of travel, which for me is fine. But in oil and gas, when every minute is worth money, they've got to find a way to get people to these rural, out-of-the-way places as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that people lose that perspective, of, especially when it's oil and gas, because they get a bad rap of, you know, they're greedy, they're this, they're that. It's like, well, if you wouldn't use the oil, they wouldn't need to go get it. So it's more about understanding that people need to get there as quickly as possible in straight shots. It's just more efficient.
And that applies to just about any industry. I mean, you need to move people quickly. The other thing is quality of life. I think that's getting lost in the mix as well. You get greater productivity out of individuals if they are comfortable and home. I mean, I use the word home because there have been several studies, and again, don't quote me on who did them.
Well, the good thing about this podcast being on the internet, they can Google while they're listening.
Oh, good.
So they're actually either at their computers or they're maybe an iPhone, and they can just Google away. So start Googling.
You know, business people who spend their life on the road, the traditional road warrior, more often than not would rather be home at night. So if you can dispatch an aircraft first thing in the morning to remote locations, and in some cases cover two or three different locations or more in the span of one day, and return that person home that evening, well, first of all, they're going to be in the office the next day, presumably. Secondly, they get to sleep in their own bed, and that's worth something, I think, in today's lifestyle. I think more people are gravitating towards, you know, the ability to return home to familiar surroundings and the creature comforts of home. And business aviation helps facilitate one's lifestyle, regardless of what your lifestyle may be.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I'd love to be able to just hop on a plane and go to an event and be home that night. But I know that's not for, you know, for a lot of people, that's not possible as an individual entrepreneur. Now, you said one, you said you had two markets. Mm-hmm. One was the entrepreneur. What is the other market that
the
you
other
cater to?
Is probably publicly traded companies, so much larger in nature, mid-cap, large-cap corporations, that really the aircraft is a business tool. It has a separate department. It has accountability.
They have their own aviation department in the company?
Their own aviation department. Most companies have someone who administers the aircraft, whether it's a chief pilot, a captain, a director of operations. But the larger the corporation, the more intricate the relationship between the transportation, mode of transportation, and the corporation itself, the users of that mode of transportation. You know, you have several layers you have to negotiate with. So there is complete accountability. There is justification of the purchase of the asset, and perhaps maybe even closer scrutiny of buying exactly the right aircraft that meets their particular needs without leaving any money on the table. Let me put it that way.
More cost effective.
Much more cost effective. And they're, you know, planning. Before they come to someone such as myself and say, we need this airplane, they've already done all the research as to what best meets their current travel needs.
Well, as we, I really appreciate your time and the beautiful office we've got here. And we've got about a couple minutes left. And I want to know, what was the key thing that you'd want people to know about the aviation business or buying a plane or a corporate jet? What is that key piece of information that people don't necessarily know about, but you think they need to know about the aviation, either whether in general or the whole aviation business itself that people don't know about, or something that you do particularly that not people are aware of that's a vital piece? That, I mean, or I can try to unexplain that horribly as well if you want me to try it again.
Well, let me try to answer it. How's that? Business aviation drives business to your hometown. That's the way you need to look at it, especially if you are a small town or city that you've driven by that small airport time and again and never given it a second thought because you don't see much activity out there. But you ought to think about the company or the individual who's 1,000 miles away, and that's just an arbitrary figure, that comes to your small town because it does business locally. And they're bringing business to you, whether it's looking at the surrounding environment and the available potential workforce to think about expanding manufacturing, production, marketing, telecommunications, whatever it might be. They've got their eye on your locale. And your Chamber of Commerce is probably trying to do a very good job to sell them. And one of them has to be access. Well, if you don't have commercial access that sufficiently meets the needs of the person or the organization looking at your environment, you need business aviation. They need business aviation. So business aviation drives business. I mean, even if you are well served, look at Teterboro Airport and how much Teterboro Airport, which is outside of New York City and northern New Jersey, serves the entire tri-state area. Look who comes in and out of that airport and generates more dollars, more revenue for that area than perhaps any other industry. In my own business, what I'd like to stress is that we are a boutique specialty aircraft marketing firm that focuses on the client. We're value-oriented. We are client-focused. I think I'm repeating myself here, but what I really want to say is that we are very attentive to your needs. We are well-versed in the subject matter. We have the resources readily available to source the aircraft wherever it may be in the world. And we can bring that to you.
And where can they find you?
In Houston.
Well, they can also find you on the internet.
On the internet at www.paravionltd.com.
I want to thank Janine once again. I listened to the podcast. It calmed me down. I'm relaxed. I'm ready to fly again. But thankfully, I have no place to go. So if you have a place you can go, realitycheckpodcast.com. You can sign up for the RSS feed. You can like us on Facebook so you get us directly in your feed every Tuesday morning. Also, you can email me, Craig at speakercraigprice.com, with any questions or comments. I look forward to seeing you guys next week.